You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 at 106 Central Time. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser in for Celeste Quinn this afternoon. And usually I'm not sitting in this chair doing the interview segment, but it's my pleasure today to be hosting a program on tornadoes. And we have a very special guest today. His name is Thomas P. Grizulis, director of the Tornado Project and also a fellow of the American Meteorological Society. And he has a new book titled The Tornado, Nature's Ultimate Windstorm. And that book is published by the University of Oklahoma Press. And it's a complete book on tornadoes. It answers a lot of questions such as how does a tornado hit a particular location or how often does it hit a particular location? How fast are the winds? Do tornadoes really seek out trailer parks? I get that question a lot. And we'll be able to answer that. Can tornadoes actually defeather a chicken? How many are in the United States every year? How big can they grow? About any question you've ever had on tornadoes, we invite you to call in and ask about tornadoes today. The phone numbers to call are 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Or our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. And again, that's 1-800-222-WILL. And now I'll bring into the conversation our guest, Thomas Grizulis. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for being on the show today.
Were those tornadoes you had a few days ago? I'm online right now reading the online version of the News Gazette.
Well,
there's some debate over that, it seems.
As a matter of fact, the National Weather Service survey had mixed reviews depending on where the damage was. The storm that hit Monticello and Piatt County west of here was indeed rated a tornado, I believe an F2 tornado. Damage in northwest Champaign was classified as straight-line winds.
It's pretty tough to tell sometimes, just from the damage.
And that's about all we have to go on there. Before we get to the talking about your book and tornadoes, I want to just personally say thank you for your help over the years. About 5 years ago, WILL-TV produced a special on tornado safety, and you may recall talking to our radio station manager, Dan Simeone, several times. And
yep, I recall the name.
Helped out immensely in getting us access to some video for that program and some information, and we want to thank you very much for that.
Well, a lot of radio and TV people find their way to this office. I've been here for a long time, and we usually get a lot of referrals to give some help.
Well, we really appreciate your help, and I know the Tornado Project has a very complete website as well that I think meteorologists all over the country, as well as those just interested in tornadoes, go to. And if you'd like to give that website address out, we might as well do that right now.
Well, it's tornadoproject.com, just one word, tornadoproject.com. Been working on upgrading the we have a section of each state, so you can tell how many tornadoes and what's the date and number of people killed and injured of every single tornado in every county. We do it by county. And we've been working on that site lately, that part of the site. It's a huge site, a lot of information there.
Well, that's the one thing I've noticed by observing your work over the years and in this book that we'll talk about today, The Tornado, Nature's Ultimate Windstorm. This has been something that has been a life's work for you, and the one thing that I've really respected over the years is you are a person that pays a great attention to detail, trying to get as much information about storms as possible and making sure all the numbers are correct. And I know it's a very tough thing to do. There's lots of conflicting information when you read through historical records, and the National Weather Service really isn't in the business of tracking tornado numbers after the fact. And would you like to just comment a little bit on what it is you do and your fascination
on
storms?
I chase tornadoes, I have actually chased real tornadoes, but mostly I chase them through newspapers. I think I've gone through about 50,000 reels of microfilm over the last 30 years and just digging out, trying to ferret out information. Was it a tornado? How many people actually died? There's a lot of conflicting information, particularly about deaths. In the South, a lot of black citizens were not counted as tornadoes at the turn of the century, counted as deaths. And it's very difficult to pin down the number of deaths if you go back 100 years. It's very difficult to pin down the location of the tornado because a lot of the newspaper reports kind of assume you know where Jim Jones lived. They don't exactly specify his house. So I've simply gone back and looked up every known tornado and trying to detail get as much detail as I can. This allows the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the National Weather Service, anyone who wants to analyze the true risk from tornadoes to use a longer database. And that length, that's been my contribution, simply instead of just having modern records, say since 1950, I've been able to extend it back 100 years before that.
And looking back over more than 100 years, there was a time in the United States when many, many more people were killed from tornado occurrences. What have you found as far as some of the worst tornadoes in history in the U.S.?
Well, there's an interesting question. I mean, what is the worst tornado? You define it by deaths or by damage. There's been some interesting debate over what the word worst means. And one of the big conclusions is that Illinois has been part of probably the two worst tornadoes in history. The Tri-State tornado in 1925, which produced 600 deaths across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. And the in 1896, the St. Louis, East St. Louis tornado, about 150 deaths in each of those cities. So although Illinois probably doesn't have the reputation that Oklahoma does, it certainly has been part of history. Of course, with Plainfield in the past, things seem to be quiet in Illinois, and then all of a sudden, wham, it's front and center in the news. This has gone on for a long time. Go back to the 1850s, and there was a major event on the Iowa-Illinois border that killed over 100 people. It's Illinois has been part of this story since records have been kept.
Now, in your book, you talk about, of course, the fact that the number of deaths from tornadoes is down over about the last half century, going back to the early 1950s. That's when the more on the awareness and forecasting of tornadoes began. But you also speculate that we might at some point have another catastrophe. There hasn't been a tornado that's killed over 100 people since 1953. Are we running out of luck here, or is it a lucky thing, or is it because we indeed are able to warn people better that that doesn't happen anymore?
Oh, I think there probably will be a tornado that kills 100 people, but it's going to have to be a very special tornado in a very special place. The May 1999 disaster in Oklahoma City, which caused $1 billion in damage, encountered 10,000 homes. It was an enormous event, and yet there was only about 30 deaths. If that one didn't kill 100 people, then probably we're not going to get 100 deaths through simply by a tornado passing through a city. The warnings are very, very good, and people are very aware. They look outside. They're watching television. The local televisions have their own radar. The awareness is such, and the technology is such, that I think the only time you're going to get 100 deaths is in a very specific single tornado just happening to hit a concentration of people, a large group of people in a school auditorium, a sporting event. It seems like the sporting event may be the single biggest threat to a really catastrophic tornado.
And, of course, tornado season around here occurs during basketball playoffs and baseball games.
Well, the basketball game down south is the one that concerns me most of all. I mean, people take their basketball very seriously. They don't want to cancel games. There's a lot of pressure on people not to cancel, to go ahead with the game. There's been a few instances in which gymnasiums were completely destroyed on basketball game nights, except they weren't playing at home. I think that probably down south in the dark, early March and the spring when the tornadoes are harder to see, more moisture, less daylight. That probably presents the single greatest threat for a really catastrophic death toll in a tornado. Illinois, I think it happened. It's a little bit later in the year, but the visibility seems to be better. It's worse than along the southern tier of states. And there's been quite a number of large death tolls that have occurred because people just didn't see the tornado.
Well, we'll talk a little more about Illinois and Indiana tornadoes in a moment. First, I just want to reintroduce our guest, Thomas P. Grizulis, director of the Tornado Project and author of the book The Tornado, which is really one of the first book I've seen in many, many years. It's just a general book on tornadoes and really compiles a lot of work over several decades, and that is published by the University of Oklahoma Press. And if you have any questions at all about tornadoes, you can give us a call. The number is 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. We invite you to call in. And I believe we do have a caller coming in a moment. I wanted to bring up one particular year because I think it was a landmark year for tornado research, and I also a landmark year for you personally, and that's 1953. I was wondering if you would like to talk a little bit about what made that a year that of such importance in tornado study and history.
Well, it's quite coincidental. For me, it was just... It was about the year I became interested in the weather at age 11. An awful lot of kids between 9 and 11 just suddenly find themselves possessed by the weather.
Me included, I might add.
Oh, yeah. So in 53, you also had, there was a lot of nuclear testing. There was these enormous tornadoes in Waco and Flint, Michigan, in Worcester, Massachusetts, Vicksburg, Mississippi. Enormous death tolls. At the same time, it was the first year that the Weather Service decided to go ahead with actually issuing warnings. Very coincidental that they would start issuing warnings and then more people would die than had died in a decade prior to that. A very difficult year for the Weather Service. A lot of questions. You know, did the atomic bomb tests trigger the tornadoes? And for an 11-year-old, just getting to understand the weather, it became overwhelming, and I started looking for information, and never really stopped looking. It's been sort of a hobby, a business, an avocation, a career, all manner of things at various times for the last 45 years.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating life that you've been able to lead there, and
very lucky.
And we do have some folks on the phone lines now that have some questions. So first we're going to go to line 4. And good afternoon, line 4. Where are you calling from this afternoon?
I'm calling from a combine at Farmer City.
Still harvesting, huh?
Yeah, well, finish tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been a long time, a lifetime tornado fan. My main question is, what is it about Decatur? Every storm that comes through Illinois, every tornado first touches down in Decatur. It's like it's getting its ticket punched. Why is it that one city like that would get hit consistently?
Well, we'll peruse that question a little bit. I think part of the reason that's asked is this last Wednesday, the tornado that went through Monticello, Illinois, the first sighting of it was from the Decatur Airport Control Tower. And back in 1996, Decatur was hit on two consecutive days, including the outbreak of April 19th of 1996.
I'm not going to make any friends here with this gentleman. It doesn't happen. There is nothing special about Decatur. Well, this is something that's puzzled me. It's one of the type of things that you learn about when you start looking at 100 years of data. And that there seem to be, in the short term, particular areas that seem to get hit more often than others. You go back and look at those same areas in the past, and they haven't been hit at all. That it's what we call random clustering. Secondly, Decatur is a good-sized target, and I don't believe there are a whole lot of towns right around it. It would seem like, because of observation, because of the number of eyes, people in Decatur would be seeing and reporting them first. This is something that's not held up. I get this all the time out of areas in Oklahoma and Kansas. We get to see them more often. They get to see them more often. There always seem to be a perceived concentration. And yet if you map it out, the only concentration that occurs is where you have the most eyes. In fact, if you plot tornadoes and tornado observations and reports of tornado touchdowns, if you put it on a blank map, what you find is you've actually located all the cities in the United States, all the cities in the Midwest. If you simply take the cities off, plot the tornadoes, put the cities back, you see they're right where the population is. It's a perception that I've tried to find these concentrations, and they just don't seem to occur. They certainly don't seem to occur historically. And so I would suggest that perhaps it's perception and not really actually happening.
Well, I have noticed in your database for Illinois tornadoes, you have it broken down by counties, and you look at the number of the longest list of tornado sightings, and they do correspond to the more populated counties.
What happens is that even the smallest tornadoes get counted. Out in a rural area, only the bigger ones get noted. But in a concentrated area where you've got a lot of people, every single thing that's rotating that stirs up dust is going to get reported. So it's really, I think, the same number of tornadoes occur further away, but they don't get counted. This also has the old mobile home thing. Mobile homes are great targets for tornadoes. Even the tiniest ones will flip one. And so they really don't seek out mobile homes. They're just good tornado detectors. So tornadoes that wouldn't ordinarily get counted, get detected, are detected if there happens to be a mobile home in the way.
Okay, well, I hope that answers that caller's question.
You may not agree with me, but I tried.
Well, I agree with you. So you at least have one vote there, because I've been asked that question a lot in the past. So I'm glad to hear somebody else have to tackle that one. We now go to line one, and good afternoon. What is your question this afternoon?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. My name's Tamara. I'm calling from Mr. Huff's classroom, third grade classroom at Leal. And my question has to do with pressure systems.
Okay.
If you have a low pressure system, does it spin counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere?
Well, I can answer that, yes.
Yes, okay.
And well, clockwise in the southern.
And clockwise in the southern.
Right.
So which way do they spin at the equator?
Well, there's no wind shear at the equator. There's very little wind shear at the equator. If you look at the hurricane map, sometimes they show on the Weather Channel, you notice they never get down to the equator.
Okay.
You really don't have low pressure areas. What you have is a general area around the equator where air is rising. It's not really spinning, it's just rising. It's called the intertropical convergence zone, and it kind of moves back and forth with the seasons.
And so does that change slowly or abruptly?
Oh, it's very slow. It's very gradual.
Very gradual.
It's very gradual. And there are what we see as a low pressure area is really a middle latitude phenomena. I don't think if you lived on the equator you would be concerned with such things as a front approaching or a low approaching. You'd be talking about wet seasons and dry seasons.
Okay. Great. I appreciate your help.
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And while we're right on that topic, briefly, low pressure in the northern hemisphere, the winds blow counterclockwise around the low, and most tornadoes have that same wind flow, but not all. Do you want to comment on that?
Oh, sure. You can get anticyclonic tornadoes. Tornadoes are a product of larger wind systems, and so the combination generally produces a counterclockwise flow. But you can get odd air flows from one thunderstorm intersecting air flows into the thunderstorm, and you can get a spin that's opposite the general spin of the atmosphere. And these things are really usually localized, where two thunderstorms, the outflow from one, the inflow to another, or the inflow and outflow on a single thunderstorm just happen to combine in the right way to produce a usually weak tornado, short-lived tornado, but spinning the wrong way. It's extraordinarily rare to get a major tornado spinning counterclockwise. You can. It's happened. There's been F4 tornadoes. But it requires a special thing that happens with big thunderstorms. You have to have the thunderstorm split in two, where one is rotating, the one thunderstorm is rotating one way, and the other side, the other half of the split thunderstorm is rotating the other way. And so you can get a major tornado, but it's extraordinarily rare to get a major one that's anticyclonic.
Okay, so most spin counterclockwise.
Oh, yeah, the vast majority, 99%.
Okay, well, we're going to go along to our next caller on line two. And what is your question this afternoon?
Well, actually, I have a couple.
I want you to
know that I had other plans, but I was driving home and I heard this on the radio, and I just couldn't resist. This is a really interesting topic. Thank you for being here. First of all, I'm a movie fan, and I think you may be familiar with the movie called Twister.
Loved it, yeah. Uh-huh. It was crazy. It was all wrong.
I had a feeling it probably was. But one question, and this is a little bit off of our topic, but were you gratified at all that the hero and heroine were meteorologists? I thought that was maybe a first.
That meteorologists as heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it right, yes. There's a lot of them out there. They're just not recognized. In
That's
fact,
right.
when they're really
well, I thought,
heroic
I thought
is when
that
they're
way,
not
that,
recognized
that
because
bad
no
thing.
One dies.
Right.
And there's nothing is in the newspaper, and you know they did their job right. So mm-hmm. it's a very quiet hero.
And the other thing, it did raise some questions for me. I'm not originally from this area, so tornadoes are relatively new. I'm from the West Coast, and I've spent a lot of time in Japan, so I've had to deal with earthquakes as disasters. But I just wondered how long the warning time is now. I mean, they were talking about that in the film a lot. They're trying to lengthen the amount of time that they had to warn people before.
Oh, an awful lot of people get an hour, but there's it depends what you call. Well, 20 minutes for mm-hmm. I think I'll say 20 minutes. But there are people who are aware of the tornado on the ground as mm-hmm. much as an hour earlier. If you're really watching,
mm-hmm.
but even the people who at the beginning of the outbreak, where let's say they're getting the first tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them will have 10 or 20 minutes warning.
Yeah,
there are a lot of situations where there is almost no warning because tornadoes can form extremely quickly.
I see.
But luckily, those aren't the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the major deaths, for instance, the Oklahoma situation in 1999,
mm-hmm.
there were people who watched that thing for a half an hour on live television
mm-hmm.
before it ever got to the. The warnings have increased immensely.
But it just depends on the storm itself. You really
every situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every situation.
So that's it. The big question mark. Also, I wonder how far fetched what they were doing was. They were trying to develop a device that would allow them that would bring back data from the center of the tornado. Is this just
won't help you at all?
Wouldn't help you at all.
Wouldn't help you. Just like you want to learn the ecology of a forest and how to make a forest grow better, you don't put a microscope on the bark.
Mm-hmm.
You really aren't going to learn anything about tornado formation by studying the tornado.
Uh-huh.
You
uh-huh.
need to stay about 3 miles, 4 miles away from it and look at the entire system, the mm-hmm. entire storm system, and all the components and layers in the atmosphere that create the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping right up into the tornado.
It's very dramatic.
You're going to learn next to nothing. And those ping pong balls would have been centrifuged out of there immediately.
I see.
99% of the debris of the tornado is immediately centrifuged right out. It would just thrown
around. I understand. Thanks for answering those questions. I am glad, though, that they did make meteorologists here.
We've been waiting for Twister 2. In fact, there's three scripts. It's been have three writers, and it's still on the shelf somewhere.
I wonder if it will be directed by Jan de Bont, who did a wonderful, I thought was a great film, Speed also, but his the sequel to Speed was so terrible. So
I've heard that Spielberg wants to do it himself, but he's got 3,000 other projects.
Oh, I bet he does.
He's a real tornado fan.
I bet he does. One other question, as I said, I'm not really familiar with tornadoes, and my house does not have a basement. However, I have a crawl space, and my neighbors say, get into the crawl spaces. Is that...
You're more likely to be crushed by the house than you
that's
are
what I,
anything
that's
else.
What I thought. I thought
that
the
shifting of a
all.
House is much more... A lot more houses are going to get shifted than are going to get blown away.
That's what I thought. I didn't think that was very wise. I mean,
no,
I didn't really want to get down there. So really, I should find a center room and try to get away from glass and flying things.
If you do that, your chances of mm-hmm. your risk from tornadoes are probably 10,000 risks in this world to your life, greater than
I see.
Greater than that of a tornado, if you can get into a central closet.
Great, I understand. Thanks a lot.
Or okay. Bathtub.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. And that brings up a few questions here. And before we go on to that, I just want to, at the midpoint of our program, introduce our guest again, Thomas P. Grizulis, a tornado research meteorologist and founder of the Tornado Project in Vermont. And he's also the author of the new book, The Tornado, Nature's Ultimate Windstorm. And we're talking about tornadoes here on the Afternoon Magazine. If you have a question, you can call in at 333-9455 or toll free 1-800-222-9455. And since you brought up the safety issue, that's one interesting thing to talk about, the crawl space versus a center room on the first floor of a house. Because I do know that most of the time we say go to the lowest floor, put as many walls between you and the tornado as possible. But really, the crawl space, not the best place.
Not at all. Not at all. A bathtub is a good place. You've got protection from the debris blowing sideways, and you've got some extra anchorage from the plumbing. So it's not, that's not fiction. I mean, opening windows to equalize air pressure is complete fiction. But the bathtub is not. It's not a bad place at all.
But if you do have a full basement, that's still the best place to go.
Oh, absolutely. Under a stairwell of the basement is your best place. You don't want to be near the walls if you don't have to. I mean, a wall can be pulled over by if the a house shifting is, like I said, much more likely. But underneath a table, underneath a stairwell in the basement, and you're going to live through the worst.
And, of course, everybody that has steps to the basement has a stairwell. So
usually there's a right.
That's a good place to go. And the other thing she pointed out, she's not from this part of the country, but tornadoes do occur in every state in the union.
Even Alaska. It's very, very rare. There's a likelihood. There's something that she said about the warning times, I should clarify. I use some very large numbers in regard to warning times, but if you're watching the weather all the time, you can get a lot of warning. A lot of the problem is that people only have a few minutes warning because they don't have they're not always tuned to weather radio. They don't have every media on that's giving them weather information. So very often even the 20-minute warning may not seem like 20 minutes to someone who just barely realized that there was a problem. You can't expect a 20-minute warning, but there's an awful lot of tornadoes, an awful lot of situations where people do have a 20-minute warning. You shouldn't expect it, though.
Okay.
Unless you're really weather aware.
Well, we try to be on this station, but even sometimes things pop up suddenly. We have another caller on line one, and what is your question this afternoon? Line one.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. After living most of my life in either Oklahoma or Illinois, I've seen and been around a lot of tornadoes. But what makes a certain tornado just get astronomically huge? I'm thinking about one that we were a few miles away from, the one that hit Wichita Falls in, I think, 80 or 81, that was well over a mile wide. What causes that sort of phenomenon?
Well, any tornado is a product of a perfect balance between updraft and rotational inflow. The storm's got to be rotating, and the air has got to be coming in at the proper angles, and you've got to have the exact amount of updraft so that if there's too much updraft, the air gets lifted too quickly, and before the air gets to the center and concentrates as a tornado. If the updraft isn't just perfect, but that's not enough. You've got to have, the air can't be too cold. Otherwise, the updraft has a hard time lifting it. You also need to have the area around the storm completely free of disturbing influences. Vortices are really very fragile. And if you have a large inflow from some other storm, the outflow from a storm interacts with the inflow to another storm, the entire system can kind of fall apart. Well, once in a while, the exact amount of rotation, the exact amount of updraft, and there's no turbulence, somehow the rotation of the air around the storm seals off the turbulence. The what we call the rear flank downdraft comes out of the storm, and it's not too cold. It's just warm enough, so when it gets to the updraft, it's lifted, enhances it. It's very, very rare, but it happens every year somewhere where all the conditions are just right. And bang, you've got Wichita Falls, you've got Andover, you've got Plainfield, you've got heaven knows a long list in the past. But just we're thankful that most of the tornadoes are real small.
Does it have to be flat then?
No, not at all. In fact, you've got Tennessee and Kentucky and New England. It's much more a product of what's going on in the first 6 miles of the atmosphere, 6 to 10 miles of the atmosphere, and less of a product of what's going on at the surface. Roughness and hills might prevent small tornadoes from forming, but if everything else is perfect, West Virginia had major tornadoes that went right over mountains like they weren't even there.
I understand what you said about clustering, but when we lived down there, we lived in near Altus, and it seemed like Altus, Vernon, and Wichita Falls sure got more than their share.
There's no question about it. You're right there. This is a product of what we call the dry line, which is a dry air that comes out of the southwest. And up through the Texas Panhandle and western Kansas, there is no question that there is an area of concentration. It's not related to population. There are areas that get more tornadoes than others. The Tampa Bay area in Florida does, and we think it's to do with the convection because of the shape of the bay. There are hot spots, and Altus is one of them. There's no question about it. I think it has to do with how dry air and moist air mix in West Texas. And those patterns keep setting up in the same place. That's not a problem. That's not a situation in Illinois. But there are areas where that do have areas of concentration.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. And you're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. Thomas P. Grizulis, a tornado research meteorologist, director of the Tornado Project, and also fellow of the American Meteorological Society, is with us this afternoon. And we have about 10 more minutes. So if you have a question on tornadoes, you can give us a call at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And I was thinking back to the Wichita Falls, Texas tornado, which you mentioned, and it seems like every tornado, every major tornado, something new is learned. And if I recall, that is one where most of the people that were killed were trying to flee their homes by getting into automobiles.
That's correct. There are people who were, a lot of people were saved, however, in the Oklahoma tornado by moving perpendicular to the storm. The trouble with Wichita Falls and so many people died, the warnings weren't as good then as they are now. And there was a lot of confusion about what to do. And there's less confusion today. There's a much more aware public. I think there were a lot of lessons, and those lessons are translated to information that's given on television. I think a lot of people understand now that they have before they get in their car, they've got to know where that storm is coming from, what direction it's going, and the television provides that information very, very well, so people can drive perpendicular to the storm and get out of its path. I'm not suggesting we do that. People do that. I mean, every situation is absolutely unique, and I, there's no general rules. But you've got to understand the motion of the storm. Otherwise, you're going to end up driving right into it.
That could be especially bad if you're in the city and there's a lot of traffic and the roads are winding and the storm is right on top of you.
Oh, absolutely. All you need is one down power line creating a backup and you've got a disaster. We're talking mostly fairly rural areas where people can safely drive out of the path of the tornado. In a city, it's suicidal.
Now, one thing that sometimes in getting some great tornado video and a lot of that shown on television, that's been the case over the last decade or so, sometimes some new myths come up. And one of those was even brought up to me during our storms last Wednesday. And an announcer mentioned, well, if you're on the highway, go to an overpass. I'm like, no, don't say that. You know, we put a kibosh on that. But it seems like as we try to dispel myths, new ones come along.
People have gone under underpasses to try to protect themselves from hail. I don't think they have any. Most people don't realize how that most hail, even size of, you know, quarters, won't bother a car or a windshield at all. But they drive under the car under the underpass to protect themselves. Somehow this got translated that it would be a good idea to do this in tornadoes, and it actually it's more of a wind tunnel effect. It's just that there aren't that many. You don't hear about people dying in underpasses. Although in May of '99 in Oklahoma, there were several different underpasses, two different underpasses where people died. They were carried right away. It's extremely dangerous, and you cannot get use it as protection from a tornado. You need to get down into a ditch below ground level. You're just setting yourself up for getting swept to your death under there. It is such a myth. It is so tragic. I've seen so many people while I was storm chasing sitting underneath the underpass. It's going to be a very difficult myth to stop. One of the myths it took a long time and I think is pretty much gone is the idea of opening windows to equalize air pressure. Believe me, the tornado, debris-filled tornado will open up those windows for you. You don't need to worry about it. If the tornado gets close enough, they'll open up the windows long before you get to the lowest pressure. But the underpass myth is going to be a tough one to break. Tough.
And, of course, another one that I continue to hear a lot about, and I don't know if you want to comment on this, is a lot of people still seem to say, I live in a city, I'm not going to be hit.
Well, that's because so many the area of the United States covered by cities is small. There aren't many. Major tornadoes are relatively rare, and only about 1% of the tornado belt is really consists of what you might call a city. So the likelihood of a tornado in a city is very small. It's happened in St. Louis. It's happened in Louisville, Wichita Falls, Oklahoma City. It will happen. It's just tornadoes are rare. Major tornadoes are rare events, and so it's very unlikely that any person will be hit by a tornado, whether in a small town or a city. But as far as the risk from a major tornado, I doubt if it's different from a rural town to a major city in the Midwest.
So it's just playing the odds game again.
It's just playing the odds game, yeah.
Okay, we have another caller on line one. Why don't we go to our caller here, and what is your question this afternoon?
I was wondering if you'd ever examine the role of legends in connecting with tornadoes. And this goes back to Wichita Falls, Texas. We lived there several years before the tornado hit. And everybody said, well, there's an old Indian legend. Because of Wichita's Falls location on a sort of a high point, and the Red River was to the north below that, according to the Indian legend, that tornadoes would never hit. Obviously, it was pointed wrong, but I was wondering if the legends such as that give people a false sense of security, and I was wondering if anybody's ever looked at that.
It's been looked at in detail, and there's absolutely no protection by rivers.
Sure.
There's many, the area around where the Missouri and the Mississippi, for instance, intersect north of St. Louis, has been hit. That area has been hit quite a number
sure.
of times.
Yeah.
You're playing the odds game. If you take any single location, whether, you know, the intersection of two rivers, and you put a dot there,
mm-hmm.
or your the likelihood that that area is going to get hit by a tornado is probably once in a thousand years.
Mm-hmm.
Tornadoes are extremely rare at yeah. any one particular point.
Yeah.
So if you take an intersection or any other point and say, if this is protected, if it only hits once in a thousand years, no one's memory is going to include any tornado at that spot.
Sure. But I think that the important point is that the extent to which people believe in those legends, they can get this false sense of security.
Well, on September 11th, I mean, Nostradamus
yep.
came out. People love legends. They
yep.
love certainty. They love an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a more uncertain world than we ever have.
That's right.
And people will grasp at straws
sure.
if it'll bring them something, some degree of certainty or confidence, and allow them to go on with their lives.
Sure.
If they believe it and that helps them live, then fine.
Yeah.
Believe
if they believe it, and then you get that massive tornado like at Wichita Falls and the concomitant confusion, it can do no favor as well.
It's a tough issue.
Yeah.
You preach be afraid of tornadoes, be aware of, you
mm-hmm.
don't preach being afraid of them,
sure.
but it's a very small risk.
Sure.
If the majority of people will never encounter one any time in their life.
Sure.
But you've just got to be aware of it as a risk and then go on.
Yeah.
I think people are more aware of other risks lately.
Sure.
But tornadoes are, again, a small risk, and if you just are alert to them for a few hours each year, then that's all you really ever need to do. You don't need to ponder them all year.
Sure.
There are people who are quite paranoid about every time it rains, they're thinking a tornado maybe.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. So do you think now compared to, say, 30, 40 years ago, there are less people that believe some of these legends? I know Topeka, Kansas, there was such a legend, and that all got blown out the window, so to speak, in 1966.
Well, you get it blown out the window, or was it the revenge of it was turned? I mean, the fact that Burnett's Mound, it was house construction. This was somehow defying the gods, and it was punishment for building at the base of Burnett's Mound. Do people believe? I think so. I think we're slowly getting. There's fewer and fewer myths, but it may never go away. There's an awful lot of education going on television. We've got huge, between public radio and all the various Discovery channels and weather channels and whatever, we're slowly becoming a more educated society.
Okay. Well, we have time for one more call, and we'll go to line one for that. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about Canada and the number of tornadoes or the frequency of tornadoes in Canada. And also, I'm interested in knowing if other continents are more prone to tornadoes or if there are continents that don't get them at all. Or
tornadoes in Canada, there's maybe 100 a year, 50 to 100 a year. There aren't many killer tornadoes, but there was one a year or two ago. In Western Canada. There are two areas in Canada that seem to be concentrated. They get them every year, and that's the peninsula between the Great Lakes in the Toronto-Windsor, Ontario area, and another one that extends up. It's an extension of the U.S. tornado belt up into Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Alberta. The same situations develop up there just later in the year. They have some intense ones, but not as frequent as the United States.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa has tornadoes almost every year, killer tornado about every 5 years. China has tornadoes every year, probably a killer tornado every year, particularly associated with typhoons that go ashore. And the spin of the typhoon there are in the United States the hurricanes, the hurricane-producing tornadoes. And in China, these typhoons are encountering a huge population. So probably the most concentrated area of tornadoes in the world may not be in the United States. It may be in Bangladesh, where you've got the Indian Desert, the Bay of Bengal, and the Himalaya Mountains create a little tornado a belt in there that's killed where 1,000 people have died in a single tornado. There are many areas of the world that have these little concentrations.
Well, I thank you, caller, for that question. And I know we have a lot of Canadian friends living in the Champaign-Urbana area, and just a lot of fascinating things about tornadoes. I'd love to go on all afternoon. Unfortunately, our time is done. And I might add that there is information on international tornadoes in the book titled The Tornado, Nature's Ultimate Windstorm by Thomas P. Grazulis, and published by University of Oklahoma Press. And Mr. Grazulis, I want to thank you very much for being on with us this afternoon.
I loved it. Thank you.
Well, maybe we can do this again sometime as we head into tornado season. But
next March and April, I'll be right here.
Okay. And as we found out, tornadoes can occur at other times of the year, including October, as we found that
out last week. And August and December. There's been an F5 in southern Illinois in December.
So any time of year they can happen. Well, thank you very much. I wish we had more time.
Well, thank you for calling.
Okay.